So this is session 12-12, titled Getting Unstuck from the Faith Crisis. Let me just kind of go through this real quick. I'm going to do a little bit of reading, but it's good. Congratulations for surviving your first full day of Sunstone. We're excited to open up Friday's sessions. Today we invite you to reflect on the diversity that exists in the space today. All of those in attendance today are brought together through various paths of the Restoration Movement. And as you move through the day, feel free to reach out to a stranger, make friends with someone new, and let yourself be challenged. Before we begin, we ask that cell phones are turned off and that those attending will be respectful and attentive. It's the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. Please keep that in mind while engaging in the Q&A portion of the session following the remarks of the presenter. I'm sure we won't have problems with any of you guys, right? So the session is being recorded, and you'll be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. The session is 60 minutes long, and we ask and just remind everyone to keep the presentation and keep Q&A within the 60 minutes. And then just as a courtesy, as soon as everything's done, you know, ask that we all exit so that the next group can come in. So about the session. The thought model empowers a person to understand how they process thoughts, make decisions, and take action in order to make lasting changes in their lives. People often get stuck in circular thinking and questioning phase of a faith crisis when they feel deceived by the current church narrative and newfound information. This tool helps people break out of the victim mentality. Amy Logan is an artist, entrepreneur, and a life coach. Born and raised Mormon, a BYU graduate, and a 30-year resident of Utah who recently moved home to California. Her weekly vlog can be found on her YouTube channel, Amy Logan Life, where she speaks weekly to topics of healing and moving on after a Mormon faith crisis. She now works on a one-on-one with clients across the globe. And we'll turn it over to Amy Logan.
For being here. I'm going to grab a microphone. I'm not one to stand behind the podium. Okay, all dark and scary things will be discussed here today. Are you ready? I know that's what comes to mind for a lot of people when they think faith crisis, and I think, no, we'll be safe. It's going to be good. We'll get through this. I will be checking my notes from time to time, though, to make sure I'm on the right page. I had an interesting experience. This is kind of funny, and this is how you know you can leave the church, but you'll always be a part of it. We were driving from California to here, and I don't know if you've ever made the trek, but there's a big canyon you have to come to before you get to St. George. It's about a 13, 15-mile canyon. It's beautiful, and about a mile before we got to the canyon, it's like maybe a few miles, stop traffic. Terrible. We're like looking at it going, this is not going to go well. We are going to be here for hours. And this lady in her black truck with pink, like, what would you call it? Everything, the accents were all pink. It was really cute. She rolls down her window, gets Jim's attention, and is like, follow me. We're like, what? She goes, this is going to be forever. Follow me. And so we're like, okay. We roll up. She's like, I'm going to take you around the back, and I'll show you how to get through. It will take longer than what the canyon would normally take, but it will for sure be quicker than sitting here trying to get through the canyon. And so we're like, okay, roll up the window. We drive half a mile. It took us 15 minutes, and we have to go back, turn around, and we go out this back way, which I have done this trip back and forth between California countless times. Never knew this road was here. So we follow her, and we get on the road. She pulls over. She tells us what's going to happen. You're going to go through Santa Clara, through St. George. You'll be able to find your way. Okay. So we're like, did we just, like, follow someone to some scary place? They're going to take us off-road and kill us or something. Anyway, I was thinking about that experience, and I was thinking about it to a faith crisis, and this is why I think you can never really take the Mormon speaker out of yourself, because you can apply anything to the gospel. And I thought, This is so amazing. This is what the work I do all the time with my clients is telling people, come follow me, I'll show you a way around. I'll show you a way around the space that gets really tricky. Because if you've had a faith crisis, it can be tricky, it can be painful. You can go to places, you know, because for sure you didn't know faith crisis was coming, right? You don't prepare for this, like it just happens. And so I just thought that's so interesting. Like here was this guide, she showed us another way around, and it was beautiful. It was, seriously, I thought, I'm so glad that we're taking this detour. First of all, it's not going to be 3 hours through the canyon that like stopped. And we get to see a beautiful, beautiful part of Utah that I've never seen. And I've taken that trip so many times. And so I just thought, well, this is perfect. I'm going to share that story because I think it really applies. And then really quick, I had a friend when I was in seventh grade. She got the chicken pox really, really bad. And my other friend and I, we'd missed her. She was out of school for 3 weeks. So we cut across. She lived right across the street. Cut across the street from school. Knocked on her door. She answers the door. And she looked awful. Like, awful. I can't explain how bad the chicken pox were, except to say, I passed out. That's how bad her chicken pox were. And I was thinking, you guys all look really good, so I don't think I'll be passing out today. But if I do go down, I'm not kidding. They thought I was kidding when I passed out. I'm like, no, really? You look that bad. Some of you don't know me. I'm Amy Logan, and I had a faith crisis. And I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. Like our moderator here shared with you, I am born and raised Mormon, grew up in Southern California, which I always joke that the church was true in the 80s. We had like a beautiful growing up. It was such a wonderful time. I was a lucky one. I had great leaders, wonderful bishops, just a beautiful ward, lots of youth activities, did all the things, Beehive president, Miami-Dade president, Laurel president, went off to BYU the day after I graduated. Literally the day after I graduated from high school, we loaded up our big blue Mormon van, drove the trek to get to BYU, dropped me off. I lived in Deseret Towers and stayed on the path, right? I did all the things. I married at 20. I met my husband when I was almost 19. And we married about a year and a half later. Graduated. I graduated in secondary ed. I taught high school for about 4 years. And I picked secondary ed. I graduated in health education because I thought it's a good degree to have to fall back on, right? I can fall back on this if something happens to my husband. And I ended up using my degree, which I loved. And then it took us a little while to have kids, so that was always fun to have questions in that department. I have two boys. Ryan's 22, and Nathan's here with us today. He just got back. He's 20. He just got back from his mission in Argentina and Paraguay. And so I'm so happy he's here. But yeah, we had a couple kids, lived in Utah Valley for all of those years from 1990 on till just this last January when I'm not married to him anymore. My fiance and I moved back to California. And I just want to say that the faith crisis for me just came out of the blue. Like I'd had doubts. I had doubts about the church, but I didn't know why. I had lots of questions about polygamy and DNC 132. It didn't make sense to me, but you know the answers you always get. It will work itself out. It's okay. We don't have to do that now. And I was really scared to study and research because we were also taught, don't read anti-Mormon literature. And I was very obedient. I was always doing all the things I was supposed to. When I was married, I was primary president a couple times. I was young women's president a couple times. I did all of those things as well. And to make my long faith crisis story shorter, in about 2005, one of my best girlfriends, we lived in Springville near each other. She is one of the people I confided in. And I said, something's just not right. Something's not right. I have doubts. And during that same time, I had gone to my bishop because I had to get a temple recommend. And I didn't have any reason except that I just have doubts. I'm not sure about the church. But I still answered the questions. But one thing he told me was, the doubts are from the devil. You know, don't worry about that. And then he said, what? Go home and read your scriptures, pray more, that kind of thing. And so I just kind of shelved it. If you've had a faith crisis, you know this shelf that you keep. And it just kind of kept getting heavier. I just kind of kept putting things there. Life was good. I had a beautiful family, had a beautiful home, loved life. Now fast forward about 2005, 2006, we had just built our dream home. We're living out in Lake Shore, if you're familiar with Utah Valley, beautiful farmland. And my friend calls me. Amy, you're right, you're right. And she's crying and she's panicking. And I'm like, what's going on, Heidi? What's happening? And she's like, I've been reading these books and I've been to these websites and you were right. And so I remember having this feeling like, okay, I'm 35 or 36. I'm an adult. I mean, I have my own family. It was in that moment I gave myself permission to go down the rabbit hole. And from that point on, I spent... Well, the first book I read was Rough Stone Rolling. And pretty much by the time I was done with that book, I realized the way I believed the church and the information presented to me growing up wasn't what I had thought it was. And I had spent the next couple years consuming and reading history like I'd never cared to before. I just couldn't get enough of it. And so somewhere around 2006, I pull into my home, my kids are at school, I'm in my blue minivan now, and I pull into my driveway, I get in the garage, shut the garage, and I had the moment where I just knew the church wasn't true for me. I bawled, somehow I got myself into the family room, and I crashed to my family room floor, and I literally wanted the earth to swallow me up. Been a long time since I've talked about this. Because I knew at that moment that life would never be the same. It just was changing. How do I tell my husband? How do I tell my children who I'm raising in this church? How do I tell my mom? My whole family is Mormon. How do I tell my friends? How do I sit in church and I don't believe the same way? And so what I love about a faith crisis, and anytime you're talking to someone who's been through that, like, we get each other. We've walked that. We've been in that pain. And so I'm just going to let this moment kind of go. Never apologize for your emotions. And we're going to be talking about emotions today, so don't ever apologize for them. It's actually a beautiful space to be in. It's hard as hell when you're going through it. But just like that road going through St. George, not going through the canyon and taking the way around. Find people who, you find this now. Now there's so many forums and groups and books and people that you can talk to. When I went through this in 2005, I was very anonymous. There was a website where you can make a little avatar and I could talk to people, but I was so scared to tell anybody. And so thankfully now, I think we talk about it a lot more than we used to. So that's kind of my quick story. I've been out of the church. I had my name removed in 2009. So I did kind of do that. But because if you've been raised Mormon, you have family. You have my son just got back from his mission. You have to find ways to navigate the faith crisis. So that's what brings us here today. So I hope that as we kind of go through this process, and bear with me, we are going to be talking about thoughts and feelings. No eye rolling, because I don't think we talk about it quite enough. But before we get into all the technical stuff I'll be walking through, there's two things I want you to remember, if nothing else, today. Your faith crisis is a moment or a series of moments in your life. And eventually you're going to get to a place where hopefully you're thankful for it, even though maybe it's been really hard. For me, it's been one of the most beautiful journeys I can be on, even with the hard parts. And you just became one of the most interesting people I know, because I know we have an instant connection. I know we can talk about lots of things, and I know we know way more about history than maybe your rank-and-file member knows, so, and I love that part. And I'm keeping this old school, that's the flip chart. So, all right, really quickly, what's a faith crisis? You start thinking about things in different ways. And what's happening is you're having a paradigm shift. And that hurts. It hurts your brain. It hurts your heart. You may even feel the pain in your body. The pain starts because You're starting to question your beliefs, the things that you never even thought to think about. You're starting to question. And so you're creating new neural pathways. And this can be painful. You're creating new neural pathways. Growing up in the church, you have a certain set of answers that answers everything. Your new neural pathways in the brain are making you literally hurt, right? So you're consuming information, you're reading, you're studying. But just know you're not being influenced by Satan, like my bishop told me. It's just your brain going to work. So you're sitting here. You may have, maybe you're not stuck anymore, but you felt stuck. Maybe you have a family member who's going through this. And you want to know how to help them. That could be reason. But what now? What do you do when you feel stuck, right? So here we go. We're going to be talking about our thoughts and feelings. But what I love about what I'm going to teach you today is it's actually really logical, and this appeals to my left brain side. So that's what we're going to do. Yes, really, thoughts and feelings. Here we go. Your thoughts and feelings control your life, or they at least steer the ship, right? We don't always think of it this way, but do you ever stop to question your thoughts? All right, now you have with the church, but you didn't until you could see it enough to question it. So you have done this before with the church. Now what I want you to do to help you get through the faith crisis is to do it again and again and again. Be aware of what's going on in your brain. Because not every thought that runs through your head is true. And I think something very interesting that happens when we have grown up in the church, especially when we believed everything was true with a capital T, we had all the answers, right? We had an answer for everything. Now we're in this space where we don't know. And getting comfortable with that space is scary, but once you get there, it can be pretty fun. You're having a paradigm shift. This basically means you're questioning your thoughts now. And like I said, maybe it's something you haven't ever done before, but that's what happens. You, going through a faith crisis, question your complete belief system. Now, a lot of people don't ever stop to do this. And I'm so glad I did, even though it didn't come the way I thought it was going. You're like, you don't prepare for this. It just happens. But what I love about the faith crisis process is, like I said, you become one of the most interesting people I know. But you look at life differently. Now you question everything differently, right? You maybe feel a little betrayed. You feel hurt. You feel like, how did I not see this? But what I find with all of that is you couldn't see it until you could see it. So think back to when this happened for you. Could anyone have told 19-year-old Amy, 25-year-old Amy, that the church isn't true? At least not for me. And I say that very sensitively because it's true for many. For me, it's not. But could someone have said that to me? No, it had to be the right moment for me. So yes, my friend called me, but she was kind of confirming doubts that I'd had years before. And that's when I gave myself permission. So questioning your thoughts. This is a fascinating process, and this is what I work with my clients all the time. Right, you guys? Just a few of you are here. All right. This is the human side of presentations. My loud board.
People did tell me the church wasn't true.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. But you...
As a missionary, I got all kinds of material stuff.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah. But you weren't ready, so you don't see it. And that's why we say you don't see it till you see it. You just don't see it till you see it. And it just happens when it happens. It unfolds in great time. Okay, I told you guys I was a teacher, right? And my clients know this. I will be giving you homework. The first thing we do when we start to question or think about our thoughts is I just want you to start today as you leave. And going through this week, I want you to start to just look at your thoughts. Because we have a gazillion thoughts a day. And some we don't even pay attention to. You know, some guy's wearing a blue shirt walking down the street. Something weird happened. Something was funny. Things just happen. But if you're like me and you think a lot, and maybe you overthink things, sometimes we don't even think to question the thoughts even about ourselves, right? And so this is so important to a faith crisis, because as you're going through this, just being aware of what's going through your head. So my job as a life coach, that's what I do, is to hold up a mirror to you. Because when you're so in your head, you can't see it. And this is why I even have life coaches that I go to, because I get stuck in my own space sometimes. That's what I do, is I help you walk through this process, because it might be a lot today, but just start being aware of your thoughts, because we have some deep-rooted things inside of us that we don't even think. Like, for example, and this is kind of funny because I handwrote this out. I had a teacher in third grade who pulled me to the back of the classroom, and I'm the very quiet, introvert, shy child, call on me and my face would go bright red kind of girl. And she pulled me into the back of the classroom and she said, "Amy, if your handwriting doesn't improve, I'm taking you to the principal's office." And I'm like, that's like the worst thing that could happen to you when you're in elementary school, is to be taken to the principal's office. And it just scared me. So much so that I had a belief, a thought, that my handwriting was bad always. Through high school, I'd cover it up. I wouldn't want people to see it. I was a teacher, so of course, when I taught school, I had a chalkboard, and I was always thinking, someone's going to say, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this?" Then I ended up having I'm an artist, my medium is clay. I had a handprint business where I did children's hand and footprints, and I would handwrite their names, and everyone would tell me, "Your handwriting's so beautiful. Is this a stencil?" I'm like, "No." So it was like this belief, right? This is what happens when you question anything about yourself. It could be something silly as handwriting, and I'm like, "Well, I guess I'm showing you guys my handwriting." But see, it's something that most people wouldn't think about unless you had an experience with it. So this is what I mean about question your thoughts. Do I have terrible handwriting? I don't know. Probably not. But I believed that for so many years until I started going, "Wait, look at all these things I do where I have to show my handwriting and no one's like told me not to do that." So that's just an example. Be the observer of your thoughts first and foremost about everything. Now, we don't always know how to look at our thoughts. So homework number two is to do what I call a thought download. The best time to do this is in the morning. And if you're going through a faith crisis specifically and you are confused, start dumping all the thoughts down on paper. This is when you get to see your brain. You don't censor this. You take 5 to 10 minutes. The good, the bad, and the ugly, you write it all down. And this is a good practice to get into to start to see what you're thinking, even about the church, about your family, about yourself. Because I know for me, when I was going through my faith crisis, myself, my being worthy, I have a whole video thing on my worthy issue. In the church, we had all these worthiness interviews. Maybe you can relate to that. Everything was about being worthy. And so doing a thought download where you get it on paper is very therapeutic. But then what I need you to do is to take that paper that you've just dumped your thoughts down on and circle the thoughts from the facts. And this is where it gets tricky, because we think our thoughts are facts all the time, everything we do. And you can have thoughts about yourself. Maybe think about things that you believe about yourself that you've just always believed, like my handwriting story. Okay, easy one. Maybe some people think they're dumb, or they think they are a loser, or they're never going to make a certain amount of money, or they can never find love, or whatever. You can find something. But that's not a fact. You may have thought that thought enough that you believe it to be true, but it's not a fact. When you can get good at this, and you can circle the thoughts from the facts, you'll be able to start to see what's happening in your brain. And this is where you can get unstuck from anything. So as we talk about all this, you can apply all the things that we talk about to anything you're going through in your life, really, to kind of wade through the issues you're going through. Now, this could be a little controversial for some, but any belief you have is just a thought you have on repeat. So like my handwriting, I believed that, she told me that, and I just kept repeating that in my mind. The stories we learn in church are thoughts we have on repeat. And a thought is just a sentence in your brain. This is what I love about this. We break it down, right? Because we think when we go down, maybe you're having a terrible day. Maybe you've probably never experienced a bad day before. I've had a few. And when I have those bad days, I spin, right? I'm never going to understand this. I'm never going to get to this certain point that I want to get to in my life financially. I'm never going to. And then I just find all the evidence. My brain gathers all the evidence to prove why I'm never going to achieve or become or do the thing that I'm telling myself I won't do. Okay, so a belief is a thought you have on repeat. Any belief, neural pathways, you know, the way you do everything, the way you put your pants on in the morning, the way you take, you drive your car to work, the thoughts and beliefs you have about everything are neural pathways created in the brain, and the subconscious thoughts you have too. You might have beliefs about yourself that are deep in there that you don't even think about during your waking hours, but they run kind of this program through your brain. And that's fun when I get to this point with my clients, because we do a lot of deep work here when we start dissecting all your thoughts. And I already went through this. My job is to hold a mirror to your brain. What's going on in there? What is going on in your brain? And when you're stuck with anything, it's hard to tell. And if you've ever been a place where you feel stuck, especially faith crisis, because I think what happens with faith crisis is we think something's wrong with us. I remember thinking, I mean, because everyone in my life, I don't think I had one non-Mormon friend. I had acquaintances, but not close friends. Everyone in my ward was my social structure. My family spanned everywhere from, like, they lived within 30 minutes of each other, from Eagle Mountain down to Springville, Spanish Fork. And they were all members. Everyone was a member. So when I went through my faith crisis initially, I thought, this is me. I feel alone. I feel separate from the rest of my family, because I'm not on the thought pattern that goes on when you're a member. So what's going on in your brain when you're going through this? What do you think keeps you stuck, or what has kept you stuck, or what did keep you stuck in your faith crisis? Can you think of anything that made you feel like, I'm not going to get through this, I can't get out of it? Yes.
It's everywhere.
It is everywhere. Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I lived here for 30 years. So we moved to California. I'm like, even though that's where I grew up and had beautiful, wonderful, lovely Mormon memories, like, that's a beautiful part of my life. But it's everywhere here. It's on the billboards, everywhere. Yeah.
It's also everywhere in your life.
Yes. Yeah.
Your culture, your friends,
yeah.
Your free time activities. I mean, I work for the Defense Department of Defense, like, all around the world. Everybody else knows how to go out for a beer.
You're like, beer. Wait.
But you don't know, you go to a party, somebody had a couple of beers, you kind of loosen up.
Yeah.
You get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You're a sinner. Yeah. Everything.
And you can't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
You're looking around your ward to see if somebody's not making some veiled comments, or maybe they're thinking something.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't need to talk to them.
Yeah, no. You think you're the only one.
Yeah. But
yeah.
You're exploding.
Yeah.
And there's no pressure.
Right. Yeah, and I call. Yeah. And every connection, so you can, well, then why, you can leave the church. Why don't you just leave it alone? Have you heard that one before? Right. Yeah. Who do you talk to? I remember sitting in Sunday school when I was going through the height of it, and the teacher was talking about an apostate, was telling a story about, I don't even remember the story, but I remember going, they're talking about me. Everything that teacher was saying, and I'm sitting there, and I'm the good Mormon girl, wife, like I do all the things, and I'm like, that's me. And I have a YouTube channel, and I started it back in 2012, so I'd kind of been through. But the reason I started it was for that reason, because I would be up at 2 o'clock in the morning bawling my eyes out, you know, walking by my kids' rooms thinking, I'm the worst mom in the world, which was a thought, right? That's just a thought. This is what I mean. This is how you dissect your thoughts. And at that time, I didn't see any faces like mine. I was super scared of, like, the angry Mormons. Maybe you know some of them, and you've probably been through that phase. I've been through that phase. I get it. But when I was starting this process, I wanted it to be safe. I wanted to feel like I was getting information that was not being laced with anger. I needed to be able to wade through this and use my brain. So for me, at that point, it started to become a logical thing, but I started my YouTube channel just sharing my story because I thought maybe there's some other woman somewhere, or a man too, that's fine. But I just thought I can put a face to this faith crisis. So if someone's 2 o'clock in the morning sitting there crying, they see someone that maybe looks like them. So that's why that started. So what keeps you stuck is feeling you're alone. Especially when you're in those early stages, and you might not know about the Facebook groups and the online forums and the Sunstone symposiums and all the other places you can go. You know, you eventually get there, but initially you don't know it's there. Right.
It's like, well, I've been angry about this for 5, 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've noticed too, and I'm in this world because this is what I deal with my clients all the time, but I'm kind of over that part. Like, it's like beating a dead horse, right? All the same issues just kind of keep recycling. But I know the value of that. I know that that's important, and everyone's going through a stage of this, and there are definitely stages to a faith crisis. You can definitely stay stuck. But like I said, examining your thoughts and pulling it back, that's why homework number one and number two is super important. All of those things, and I'm sure you guys have more in your head that you could share with me. Which brings me to basically the basis of everything I do with my clients. It's called the thought model. And the thought model is a process that literally will show you those looping thoughts. So if you get stuck getting angry, if you're really stuck sad, and I'm going to explain this here in a minute, if you're feeling stuck and overwhelmed and confused, there's actually a way that we can get into your brain and show you exactly why all that is happening. And it's called the thought model, CTFAR. My clients know this. Let me break this down for you. So that CTFAR is where I have my clients fill in all of these things for me. So the C stands for circumstance. This is a neutral circumstance. Some people say it's like a fact, it can be proven in a court of law. It's like the church is the church. But we have a bunch of thoughts that come into our head when we think about the church, right? And for some of us, we might be angry, we might feel betrayed, these are feelings. But you have thoughts about the church when you've gone through a faith crisis. Maybe they're neutral, I don't know. But usually we have these thoughts, which are opinions, about the circumstance. All right? Now, remember, a thought is just a sentence in your brain. But what happens is that goes around and around and around in your brain to where you believe it to be true. So what I love about doing the thought model with my clients is we get to dissect it. I get to help you see that that's just a thought and that we can change our thoughts eventually. So you have a circumstance, you have a thought about the circumstance. That thought creates a feeling. Now, a feeling is just a vibration in your body. It's different than a sensation. A sensation is if you touch a hot stove, you burn your hand. Okay, that's a sensation. A feeling will always be created by a thought. So if you're having a confused feeling, an overwhelming, maybe you feel overwhelmed with the volume of material you're reading when you go down the faith crisis path, right? When you hunger and thirst out of Mormon history, like I did, you start creating a bunch of thoughts. Like, what are some of the thoughts that run through your mind when you first started all of your faith crisis? Okay, yeah, maybe you do feel stupid. So stupid would be the feeling. The thought is, how did I not know this? I did all the things. I showed up. I was in everything, right? I did all the callings. I said all my prayers. I read the Book of Mormon. So yeah, you can have your own interpretation. That's your thought, which creates a feeling. Now what happens is when you have that feeling, it produces an action. Now, an action could be an action or an inaction. What you do or don't do when you have this feeling. Now what's amazing is you will get a result. But if you're stuck in your faith crisis narrative, the pain from it, generally we can't get out of this because we don't stop thinking this thought. And so what happens is we keep looping. And therefore we stay stuck, right? We just keep looping. Because we're not questioning our thoughts to begin with. We're not seeing what's creating the feeling. What's creating this feeling? What's creating the feeling is a thought, and for the most part, based on the circumstance. So the goal is to get the circumstance to be neutral. Because if you, most of us sitting in here, if we put the Catholic Church up here, or if we put, you know, the Jewish faith, we put any other faith, we don't have the same thought and feeling that we do when it's the Mormon Church. But that is a circumstance. It's a neutral fact. The Catholic Church, I mean, yes, you probably have thoughts and feelings about that too, but you're not as triggered, right? Does that make sense? So this whole process is what helps you, well, what keeps you stuck if you keep thinking that thought and you never question the thought. You will stay stuck in this loop. So the goal is to get you out of that loop so that you don't stay stuck. Because, and this is just kind of a summary of it, your thoughts create your feelings create the actions you take in life, and those actions will always lead to the result that you are getting in your life, whatever that result is. So staying stuck is a result because you keep spinning and looping through all that. So, what thoughts and feelings keep you stuck? Now that you've kind of looked through the thought model, sometimes you can reverse engineer this and go, what am I feeling? So, whether you're going through a faith crisis now or you have been through a faith crisis, what was the overriding feeling that you felt? Does anyone have one that you just felt all the time? It could be sadness, betrayal, stupid. What thought made you feel that? Then you find out why you're stuck. This is fascinating. So let's say you want to tell your family. I find this to be an interesting thing when people go through a faith crisis. They feel like they need to make a big announcement. And maybe you've seen this with some of your friends. Of course, Facebook opens us up to all everybody's thoughts and feelings all the time. I need to tell everybody. We go back to what we were talking about earlier about how no one could have told you this ahead of time, that you're going to experience this. Whatever you're avoiding, so I use the example of telling friends and family. Because a lot of people stay stuck, and I work with my clients all the time about this, is how do I tell my husband or my wife, my bishop, my sister, my parents, my children? Whatever that feeling you're feeling when you're staying stuck, so for me it was overwhelm, I don't know, confusion, you could put a few in there. I was making that feeling in my body ahead of time by thinking the thoughts that created the feeling. So we think we're avoiding that feeling by not telling our friends and family, but you're creating that feeling in your body ahead of time anyway. So after a lot of work with my clients, I can be like, so if you're feeling that feeling anyway, you can create the thoughts that you feel comfortable sharing. Now, not everyone needs to create a YouTube channel. Not everyone needs to have a platform that they announce their faith crisis to, or, you know, to everyone. But whatever you want to do, what do you need to think and feel to create the action that will allow you to tell your friends and family? I have a client I just worked with on this very specifically. She's scared to death to tell her mom and dad. And she herself's a 32-year-old woman with kids. Okay? It's so scary. Because what happens, and this, oh my gosh, you guys, I love this so much. This is what happens. Okay, we kind of talked about this. So now I'm abbreviating thought and feeling. We talked about this. It's really this simple. We create so many thoughts and feelings that we make it bigger than it is. I'm trying to get to the page where I'm really excited to talk to you about. This is it. Your feelings are caused by what you think. Now, there, so I'm saying there meaning your parents. Let's say you're trying to tell your parents or your children. Their feelings are caused by what they think. Therefore, you don't cause anybody's feelings. But we get stuck in everything because we think we are responsible for everybody else's feelings. But can you ever get in someone's brain and see what they're really thinking? No. So we stay stuck because we're afraid we're going to hurt their feelings. Now, go back to what we talked about at the beginning. I'm saying you, like, let's just use parents for an example. They have a set of thoughts and beliefs, right? A belief is just a thought you have on repeat. That's probably been conditioned in you since you were really young. That they have all the reasons why they're sad that you're leaving the church. That's based on their lived experience. You're over here having a different lived experience with all of the information you've been consuming. This is really tricky, right? Probably some of you are going, I'm responsible. Think how powerful you are if you are responsible for everybody's feelings. Isn't that crazy? Now, but we don't, when we're in that space, we're not thinking that way. They get to manage their mind. All of this that I'm talking to you about is about you managing your mind. Other people get to manage their minds, which means whatever you're choosing to do, leave or stay. And it doesn't matter to me if you stay in the church or you leave the church or you're just free-falling for a bit because you don't know what to do. That's an option as well. You're just trying to manage your mind around all this. But you get stuck because you're thinking that all of these people are going to have all these thoughts and feelings. And what does that do? That means you're handing them the power. You're giving over your power to the people who you're afraid of telling. Now think how powerful this is if you can do this for every area in your life. You are in charge of your thoughts and feelings. They get to manage theirs. So if someone, your dad, loses it because he's really mad at you that you left the church. Sorry. I mean, I doubt any of us are really callous that way. Of course, we are loving and compassionate people. But at the end of the day, you stay stuck because you're afraid of what someone's going to think. So we see memes all the time. It doesn't matter what anyone thinks. Their opinion about you doesn't matter. But we are also human, and it affects us. But when you can break this down logically, and that's what I love about this, is it breaks it down logically. So we get stuck in our feelings all the time. Connect that feeling to a thought, and you'll know why you're thinking it. But we usually don't look at it that way. It's just one big jumbled mess, right? All these things going on in our head. So that's why you do the thought model. I think the thought download, that was homework number two. So you can really start to see what thoughts are affecting your feelings and why this is happening. So this is a huge part of getting unstuck, okay? This is a huge one, you guys. We all want to be loved and understood. Every one of us, we're human. Guess what? Your friends and family don't have to understand you. I remember thinking, if they could just understand what I've been through. You know, I shared my story at the beginning. It was hard. It hurt like hell. And if they just knew what I was actually doing was trying to find the truth. Because if the church is true, it will withstand all this. That's what's going on in my head, right? Why would they understand what I've been through when they haven't been through it? They fully believe. And I'm expecting them to understand this huge thing I just went through. Because my thoughts and feelings say that they should understand me. That's a huge one. This is the most important part. You have to understand you, what you've been through. Your story matters because you've been through it. This is your lived experience. It's not theirs. Now, they might have to deal with you, you know, whether you leave the church or stay in the church. But you have to be the most loving and compassionate to yourself. You give that to yourself first. Expectations will get you every time. The expectations we put on friends and family for something that we've been through. When you can start to do this is when you will start to feel free from the crisis part of your faith crisis. And it's the best gift you can give yourself. All right? We want other people to know because it hurts so bad. And then they wouldn't have all these thoughts and opinions about us, right? Being the black sheep of the family or being the apostate or being the wild, crazy ex-Mormon, right? This is when you'll start to get unstuck. Even if, okay, because these are thoughts, I would assume many of you have heard this before. Many of these things, and we could probably make a list a mile long. Even if your family thinks you've been influenced by the devil, even if they think you were offended, and so you left, even if they think you were lazy, you couldn't hack it, I've been told that before, too. Even if they think you wanted to drink coffee, I'm going to say maybe that's true. I totally wanted to drink coffee. Maybe you wanted to party, okay, and that has a whole list of things that you could put under that. Maybe you wanted to fill in the blank. Okay, your family is going to have, and friends, and people in the ward, they're going to have a list of thoughts. It's easier. Do you see how it's easier for them to think this than for them to have a paradigm shift? Let them think this. You gain confidence by living your experience, not having to prove it to anyone. So I believe that you can't convince anyone of anything. Just like no one could have told me at 19, 20, you know, no one could have told me. I had to come to it on my own. And except for the coffee, there's no other reason. None of these reasons were right. Okay, homework number four. I want you to change the questions you ask yourself or the thoughts that you have. You change your thoughts, challenge your thoughts. That's why you do the thought download I talked about. That's why you start to be the observer of your thoughts, because you don't have to believe any thought. Okay? Question your thoughts. We get so up in our head all the time that we don't stop to do this. And this is huge, and this is what I work with my clients on every day. And it's a beautiful thing to see it come across their face. Oh my gosh. It's like magic. When you really get into this, and this is like, these are the cliff notes. My clients can attest to that. This is going really fast through all of this. Now, there's no rush to your faith crisis, you guys. It's going to take the time it needs to take. There's no rush. There's no finish line. It's all in your own time. And you'll know. You'll just know when it's time to move on and heal, when you're tired of being stuck in those looping thoughts that we talked about earlier. You'll just go, I just need to set this down. I'm tired of carrying it around. And to me, I don't really use the word forgiveness anymore. I use the word setting it down. So anything that I've been carrying around, whether I'm mad at the church, now remember, the church is just the church. It only becomes something that my thoughts and feelings, think about it when I add all that to it. And I can go there too, believe me. but you'll know when it's time to set it down. It just gets exhausting. This is what I love about you the most. Your new voice is emerging. It's brave and strong and beautiful. This is why you're one of the most interesting people I know. Because someone who, you know, you're afraid to tell, they haven't lived it. We've lived it. We've walked this path. We instantly know. Instantly know what each other's been through. Of course, we have different variations. We have different people in our story. We have different experiences. We have differences. But it's the same, right? Our human experiences has led us here, and we can connect with one another. I know we're kind of getting what... Okay. So let's kind of break this down really quick. The thought model is this. Notice what you're thinking. Notice how your thoughts always create a feeling, which create an action, which gets you a result. So if you want, let's say your result is, I'm going to tell my family. What do you have to think to create the feeling that will create the action for that to happen? So you reverse engineer it. Once you truly understand and believe, we'll get to the belief part in a minute, that it's you, your thinking, I forgot an R there, your thinking causing all the, your thinking causes it all, you can decide to change. Decide what you want your new result to be, so that's the R up here. What do you need to feel, to do, to think, to create it happening? Okay, this is probably where I spend a lot of time with my clients, is the believing part. You have to believe the new thought you're creating, and you might not believe it straight away, whatever it is. So we do baby steps, because if you're wanting to make huge changes in your life, like you could take, maybe it's easier to see with like, you want to make $100,000. You've never made $100,000 before. You don't believe that that's possible. What could you start with? Baby step your way there. Okay? So same thing with something of telling your family or deciding to set your faith crisis down and heal from it. Whatever it is, this part takes patience. So it's not as simple as like, oh, I can just create a new thought. Because if you think a new thought, and you're like, well, that's kind of BS, it won't create the feeling you need to do to make lasting changes. So we do the baby steps. And this takes practice. Your brain is tricky. Your brain will find it does this thing where it collects all the evidence, right, to prove why you're miserable, or why you're stuck, or why someone doesn't love you. All those things. Your brain, like, we know, I got this, and it will find all the evidence. And then you believe it because you're believing all those thoughts in your head. So that's why this takes time. You have to practice it. So this is just like this whole thing that I'm talking to you about. It's like going to yoga or building muscles at the gym. You can't just go once, lift some weights, and then have big, beautiful biceps. It just doesn't work that way. Your brain is exactly the same way. Until you take the time to work through it and practice your new thoughts, you won't believe it and you won't be applying it to your life. Right? Your brain wants to stay safe. That's what it knows. So if you're going over here going, okay, brain, That's just a thought that I don't have to think anymore. And you've done this. You did this with the church. So you know this can happen. But that's why it's called a faith crisis, because it doesn't feel good. It's uncomfortable. It makes you stretch and move in ways you aren't used to. So whatever you're working on, and like I said, this applies to anything, not just faith crisis. Be patient with yourself as you go through this process. I want you to question your thoughts and start today. And like Byron Katie says, you think a thought, just say, is that true? Is that thought true? Stop and question your thoughts. So it's what's creating everything in your life, right? Your misery, your happiness, all of it. That is what is happening. Okay, yeah, we did that. I think we'll probably wrap up. But yeah, does anyone have any questions or any thoughts and feelings about this? Once you start practicing this, you'll start to see changes in your life. And this is why I work with my clients over and over, because it's so easy to slip. You will default into what you're comfortable with. And sometimes we're comfortable with sadness. Sometimes we're comfortable with the misery. Sometimes we're comfortable with the uncomfortable. And if you are tired of being uncomfortable, this is what you have to do. And it's a very logical way to help you get unstuck from your faith crisis. Thanks. Okay.
But we probably have time for one question, but because it's being recorded, if anyone has a question.
Bring it on. I'm an open book. You can ask me anything as well. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you for giving a correct definition of what faith crisis is. It is my paraphrase or my spin. What you said was, it's a matter of thinking first. And you have control of things. And the crisis is the result of things you think. So if you think differently, the crisis will.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, you guys.